Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with someone in the entertainment world. My guest today is an author, and he has just released his debut novel, Tax Collectors and Other Sinners. It is my great pleasure to welcome Wayne Vinson to the program. Wayne, hello.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
I'm doing great. I must share a little secret with our listeners about Wayne. Prior to doing an interview, I always like to try and talk to my guests to find out a little about them, just to gauge how they're going to be on air. But I don't like to bother people by calling them unannounced, so I use a technique. I send an email and try and set up a good time to call them. And inevitably, with Wayne, he replies, "I'll be inside between 10 and 11 a.m. It's that one word that always gets me, inside. And the third time this happened, my curiosity absolutely got the better of me. What could he possibly be doing outside all of the time? Wayne, would you care to enlighten us all?
Yeah, well, I live on a farm, and we've got more work than I can ever do, but it's relatively cool between, say, 7 o'clock and 10 o'clock, and so that's when I do it. I'm outside, and then I come inside about 10 because it's hot. So that's the reason for that.
When you say farm, are we talking animals or crops or what?
Well, it's 53 hilly acres. We actually we have two horses, cats and dogs. We do raise a crop of hay, and we cut hay twice a year. That's about 12 acres. In addition, we actually mow 4 acres, just like with your lawnmower, you know. And that takes a lot of time. And we also mow our pastures, which are 20 to 25 acres. We use a 10-foot brush hog pulled by the tractor for that. And then, of course, there is the dreaded weed eater. I have a lot of banks here, and it takes a long time to mow them with a weed eater. So that's what I'm doing before 10 o'clock.
Wow. Rather you than me. And I'll bet you thought that retirement was going to be easy.
Yeah, I did. And, oh, boy, it is not.
Okay, well, let's get back to the plot here. Wayne, would you care to tell us a little bit about yourself, your life prior to becoming a slave to the weed eater?
Well, okay. I grew up in Indiana. I went to Indiana University, and I got a BA in history. And when I was about ready to graduate, I needed a job, and I couldn't teach it. So what do you do with history but teach? Well, I took a civil service test, and about 2 or 3 months after that, I got the first telegram of my life from the IRS. And they were offering me a potential job to come up to Cleveland, Ohio for an interview. And so I went to Cleveland, and I was hired. And that's how I got in the IRS.
Wow. I'll bet that you weren't very happy seeing a telegraph from the IRS. I know I wouldn't be.
Well... You know, I filed a little short form, a card form then. I just had summer jobs, and I didn't make much money, and so I wasn't really worried. I was just mainly curious about what they want, you know. And they were what they were doing is offering me a job, provided I could pass their interview, which I did. And so it wasn't too bad.
How many years were you with the IRS?
Well, a total of 33. I was a revenue officer, which is a federal tax collector, for 8 years. And then I was a supervisor of revenue officers for another 25. And supervising is tougher than doing it yourself, I can tell you that.
Yes, I think I've been down that road. You know, you reach the stage where you go, oh, why don't I just do it myself?
Well, that is correct. And the requirements that IRS puts on its managers, they are terrific. I was on a panel once to determine how long it would take us supervisors to get everything done if we did it all the way that they outlined. And it came out to about 80 hours a week. And needless to say, that panel went nowhere. There was no recommendation, no report from it. That was the end of it.
Okay, there's a question that I always love to ask a first-time author. What got you interested in writing?
Well, the first and most truthful thing is that I love to write. I have always liked to write, and I wrote a lot for the Internal Revenue. I would write reports for my people. Some of them weren't especially good writers, and so I did it. I just like to write. And then when I retired, I wondered if I could write a book. You know, it's a daunting thing. You stop to think, well, I'm going to come up with a story that will hold people's interest, and it should be around, well, at least 300 pages or so. And so one day I got my old typewriter out, and I sat down and I began. Luckily, my wife talked me into doing it on a computer very shortly.
Yes, so I was just about to say, typewriter. That's going to slow you down just a little bit.
Oh, boy. I've come to rely on a computer so much because you can change things without retyping the whole thing. You know, that's the benefit of that. But,
right. In fact, I am a big fan of typewriters. at one point, I had a bit of a collection. I had 20-something of them.
Oh, wow.
But alas, the last time we moved, it just wasn't practical to bring them with us.
What did you do with them? Can I ask that?
Oh, I just looked at them, and I marvel at how incredibly well made they that they were. Not the electric ones so much, but you know the real true manual typewriter is just a piece of engineering wizardry.
Well, it really is, and I've looked at those things too, and seen how the letters come up. You know, they really were precise, and they lasted forever. But what I meant was, what did you do with them when you moved?
Oh, I gave them away. My daughter has a couple of my absolute favorites.
Yeah.
And here's a piece of typewriter trivia for you. I was in possession of the last model of manual typewriter ever made, and you'll probably find this hard to believe. It was manufactured in 1986.
Wow.
Yeah, and, you know, sure, you know, typewriters were still commonplace, but inevitably they were IBM Selectric, you know, or other brands of electric typewriter. But,
yes.
Yeah, a true manual one. Okay, enough of typewriters.
are you going to tell me what kind of a typewriter it was?
You know, I can't remember off the top of my head. It was actually a very well-known brand, but it was...
Underwood?
Actually, it might well have been, but it wasn't manufactured by Underwood. It was actually manufactured by a Chinese company that had bought the had basically just bought the rights to the name.
Yeah. Well, that's business, I guess.
Right. Anyway, you have just published Tax Collectors and Other Sinners, and it's a book, incidentally, that I thought was incredibly well constructed. It had an air of maturity, I think that's the right word to use, that you don't usually find in a first-time author. But more on that in a little bit. Would you care to share the basic plot outline with us?
Oh, the plot. Okay. the thrust of the novel is this. A bad guy is killing IRS agents in spectacular ways. And IRS and the other law enforcement agencies that become involved, of course, don't know who it is. That is the thrust. It's the chase. It's a chase. I love the chase. They eventually find out who it is. That is the basic plot.
Right. But from a reader's perspective, you deal with it slightly differently. The reader knows who the killer is from the first few pages. Tell us Bobby Bain's story.
Okay, well, Bobby Bain, he is a 13-year-old boy, and he lives in the country. His father has a machine shop. And Bobby is everyone likes him, but he's got a really bad streak. In fact, he is a psycho. And in the first couple of short chapters or so, he kills his girlfriend, a 12-year-old girl that he maneuvers into the elevator shaft of an abandoned mine. And, well, that takes care of that. And then his father, who is a good guy, runs a machine shop. He gets in big tax trouble. He owes tax, and he can't pay it. And so IRS comes in and sells him out. And his name is Kurt Bain. Kurt kills himself as a result of this. He does. And Bobby finds him hanging at the end of a rope. And Bobby, at that point, this 13-year-old boy, swears vengeance against the Internal Revenue. And he carries it out when he grows up. He wreaks vengeance against the IRS. And that is the plot.
Right. I'm not a critic. I'm a reader. I'm a reviewer. And anyone that calls me a critic, I'll string them up from a rope. but... there are elements that I always look for in a book. Two important aspects are plot and character development, both of which you handle admirably. I want to talk about the characters. You do a wonderful job developing the characters. Did you base them on real people. I'm not trying to intimate that, you know, you happen to know a psychopath socially.
Well, thanks for your compliments. I appreciate that. You know, I would say except for one or two people, they were strictly fictitious. I have a revenue officer, who is a bad revenuer in my book, and he's a bully. His name is Hammerschmidt, and I did sort of base his character on somebody that I knew in the IRS, who also was a bully. There were a few. The other person, Inspector Case, he is the guy who leads the search for the killer in the book. And I actually, when I wrote about him, in my mind, I saw my best friend from high school, whose name was Case. And those are about the only two, though, that I based on real people.
So Wayne Vinson isn't in the book?
No, Wayne Vinson is not. The job I had for most of my time in IRS was the same that Jerry McCord had. He is a group manager in the IRS, and he has a lot of responsibility, but he was somewhat different than I am, yeah.
Did you enjoy creating the characters?
Yeah, I did. I like to create the characters, and I really like dialogue. I think the dialogue is pretty snappy, pretty sharp, and I really enjoyed doing that. You know, I think that for a very young person, development of character is kind of hard, but when you've been around as long as I have, you have seen lots of characters, so it's not that hard.
Right. In fact, I have a very quick story. I'm working with a client who shall remain nameless, and he wants to publish some material, but he cannot, under any circumstances, publish it under his own name. So I've been working in the trenches, creating a fictitious character for him, and it really is quite delightful. You know, I have based this gentleman on a melange of people that I've met, you know, over the years, you know, slightly snobby Englishman. But yeah, I sit and tinker with this with this character and just sort of sit giggling, and my wife thinks I've become unhinged.
Oh, maybe she's right.
could be. What sort of reader feedback are you getting? I know that it's early days, but I'm sure that you're hearing things back from readers.
Well, my book is a thriller. And it's so I am presuming that it's mainly people who like thrillers who are reading it, and the feedback has been tremendous. Really, there are people who call me and email me and say things like, you know, I'm not much of a reader. This is mainly men who do this. They say, you know, I don't.
Hello? Hello? Oh, dear. Looks like we might possibly... Wayne, are you still with us? Oh dear, we appear to have lost Wayne Vinson. I'm going to play a quick audio track and see if we can reacquire him. Let's play. Let's play some David Michael, "No Bid on a Dream."
Here's those tears on the pillow. Here comes that damn dog moon. Here's that well broken heart. It fell all apart so soon. Here's a wake up call to the know it all who figured what you said was the answer to the question of the thief left in this bed. I guess that it was all in my head. I know it seems like the low bid on a dream, but here's the pay for the piper. He plays the same old tune. Here's that well broken heart that fell all apart so. Here's a love that's gone, and a chance to pawn that fake silver lining. Join the crowd in the smoky cloud with the ladies dressed in pink. Try to drum up something for my head.
Bit of luck, we have Wayne Vinson back with us. Wayne, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
I'm not quite sure what happened there. A technical glitch.
Yeah. Well, we lost 4 or 5 minutes, but I'm back.
It's all right. Did you enjoy the tune?
Did I enjoy what?
The tune I was playing.
Oh, it was fair.
It was fair. Okay. Where were we?
You asked about feedback, and I explained that it almost entirely super favorable, very enthusiastic.
That's great. Let's do something incredibly commercial. Where can people buy copies of Tax Collectors?
Well, Amazon has it. Amazon has the hard cover, the soft cover, and they do email for the e-matter for the Kindle. Barnes & Noble has it, hard cover, soft cover. Now, their reading machine is the Nook, so if you have a Nook, you have to get it from Barnes & Noble. My publishing company, Author House, has it also. And if you go in on a computer, Author House, AUTHORHOUSE, you can certainly get to them. And there's I sell and sign some books. You go to my website, www.vinsonbooks.com, and there's a procedure where you can get a book signed by me, and I guess
what?
That's about it.
Huh? Did I get a signed one?
No, I don't know if I did or not.
I feel slighted.
I'm not sure. You may have been slighted.
I am joking with you.
Yeah.
I won't give away any spoilers here because that's not my style. I hate people that, you know, give spoilers for books and movies. But I do have a question, and it's been nagging at me.
Okay.
The killer, Bobby, does have a calling card. It's a little obscure, and I, as I recall, on one occasion, the calling card is destroyed. What I haven't been able to figure out is why did he select five victims?
Well, it's risky ascribing motives to psychos. But I would say it probably had to do with the IRS sale of his father's machine shop. They sold big items first, and then they sold lots, and the lots are numbered. And lot number five that they sold that day was various pieces of steel, and his engine, the railroad engine that he and his father were building, was included in that lot. It was an error on the part of the IRS. But that was lot number five, and after he saw it sold, he went back in his cave hideout and brooded on it. That, I think, is probably the explanation.
That's a great explanation. It really has been bothering me. And you know, when I read a book, you know, I want to get these minute details. In fact, it's one of the motivations behind being a book reviewer. You get to annoy the author. You can ask these questions.
Well, I'm glad that opportunity exists for you.
How long did it take you to actually write it? From, you know, sitting down at your typewriter to holding it in your hand in the finished version?
Well, to actually write the book, it probably took me 6 or 8 months. But there was significant time after it was finished, getting it to the publisher and all the back and forth on the phone and on the computer. It took probably 4 months to get the book created and in my hands. Something like that.
So we're talking right around 1 year.
Yeah, that's about right. Uh-huh.
Wow. That's a lot of writing. I mean, I write every day, but the idea of bolting a book together is daunting. It's a task I've looked at. I've played with the concept, even have some sample chapters, and I work on it for a few weeks, and then I put it to one side for a couple of years.
Whoa! Yeah. Well, good luck.
Right. What marketing plans do you have? Are you doing any book signings, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I've had 8 or 9 book signings. The Canton Repository. Canton's a good sized city, and they did a nice article for me in that. I've had various of the. The towns where I've had book signings, their newspapers are very good about giving me some free publicity. But, you know, it's going to take more than that. I am doing some advertising now. I'm going to have an ad in Book Page. That's a publication that goes out to libraries everywhere. And then libraries are give it free to their clients. I'm going to be in a book fair this fall in Wooster, Ohio. That's a big thing. I haven't been there before. Oh, golly. I've got a Kirkus review. I've got this review. There's a group called the Midwestern something, and they're supposed to be reviewing it. I'm not sure about that.
Midwestern Book Reviews.
That is correct. And I read about them. They have 70 some people who just voluntarily review books, but they're tremendously busy. And I'm not sure when I'll get my review. But you know, it is tough because nobody knows who Wayne Vinson is. It's hard to, even though you got a good story. It's tough.
Well, the basic numbers are not in the favor of the author. That there are something like 300,000 new titles published each year in the U.S. alone.
I've read that statistic, yeah.
Right, so, you know, it is an uphill battle.
Yeah, well, I hope I can get the word out to enough people who will try the book. I think it is it's a real good book, and what can I say, you know? I am glad for your blog. I thank you for this. I'm hoping that will attract some attention.
I have to ask. I consider book writing to be more addictive than heroin. I can name very few authors that can stop at just one book. Do you have another one you're thinking about?
I do. It is sort of a follow up to the Tax Collectors and Other Sinners, the book we're discussing. It's called The Tax Protesters, and it deals strictly with the violent tax protesters. There were some. I guess there still are. And it's got a terrific beginning. The first chapters are great, but that's as far as I've gotten on it. I'm right now trying to sell Tax Collectors out of theirs.
Talking about violent protesters, we had a conversation a week or so ago, and I asked you about going out in the field and the potential for bad things happening. I believe you told me that one tax collector that you knew or knew of managed to get himself shot four times.
Yeah, that's correct. He was in the district office, surrounded by people, and the guy was sitting in an empty office waiting to meet the revenue officer, and the revenue officer came in, and the guy pulled out a gun and shot him four times. Luckily, none of those hit anything vital, and he recovered, and that was fine. I don't know what happened to the man. After he shot the revenue officer, he simply put his gun down on the table and waited for the police to come. So. And then the one incident of violence that concerned me was I had a fella who just hated to pay taxes. He did not want to pay tax. And I got this guy every year. I got his income tax account to collect. And I guess after about the third or fourth year, I caught him on a job. And we have something that's similar to a garnishee on wages. We call it a levy. And we have have the authority to simply fill it out, sign it, and serve it on somebody, and then they have to pay us instead of them. Well, this man was a, turned out he was a painter. He was painting a large house one afternoon. I knocked on the back door, hoping to find someone there. Turned out they were old people. They were asleep, and they didn't hear me. And then I went around to the front porch where this guy was, and he was painting with a brush, and I walked partway up the steps, and I said his name. I thought I'd try again, just trying to collect from him. And he picked up the paint sprayer. It was sitting there, and the air compressor was running. And this guy charges down the steps at me, and he is spraying me. And then I'm running, and he's chasing me. And this must have been hilarious to see, really. Two big, tall guys running across the yard in a bright, sunlit afternoon, and no one saw this. It was in town. But eventually he ran out of hose, and then he was hitting me, he was whopping me as he ran. So I turn around, I go, this guy's trying to kill me. So I turn around, and we flailed away at each other for a while. And then we just stopped, and this guy said, if you come around here again, I'll beat you to death. Well, I questioned his ability to do that. He hadn't really done much damage so far. But I gathered my stuff. I wiped paint off of me. Mainly it was on my back because I was running. And I got in my car and I left and I reported it. And they arrested the guy. He spent one night in jail. And it was months and months before his case came up in the Dayton Federal Court. And no one from IRS was there. There was an assistant U.S. attorney who handled this case. Like that's always what happens. They handle all the cases that come before them. And lies were told on the part of the taxpayer. And he made me look really bad. And they gave him a slap on the wrist. I think they convicted him of intimidating a federal agent. They had to do something because it was obvious that it was I was performing my duty when I was there, and it was in normal working hours and all that. But that happened, and the worst part of it was it ruined my clothes, and it was heck getting it out of my hair.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So I mean, I'm laughing and. You know, you're laughing, but I'm sure that at the time it was anything but humorous.
Well, that's true. It was. It happened so fast. I'm partway up the stairs to the porch. This is a truly big house, and there were about four or five steps to get up on the porch. And he put his brush down, picked up the gun from the compressor. And then the hose was probably 50 feet long, I think. And he had 50 feet in which to spray me. Then he started whopping me. And I was amazed, you know. And this happened, you know, this all happened, this took 10 seconds, you know.
Right.
We had a little battle there, and then we stepped apart, and that was
Wayne, I'm looking at the clock, and we are just about out of time. I really, really want to thank you for taking time out to talk with me today. It's been a delightful interview. I think that's the only way to describe it. And I'm sure I speak for... certainly speak for Blogger News Network, and I'm sure I speak for all of our listeners in wishing you every success with tax collectors and other sinners. And I also want to be first in line to read your next book.
Well, that's very complimentary. And Simon, I thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy and safe weekend, and we will be back again soon. Till next time, Goodbye.